I don't know about you, but I like to think of myself as being a nice, easygoing, free-thinking, liberal Christian. Sometimes, though, that may make you seem like a bit of a soft touch, while others of a more rigorous bent refuse to compromise. We will bend over backwards to accommodate the wishes of others, be aware of the sensitivities of others, rather than seem to impose our wishes or preferences. It happens in our response to other world faiths. It even happens within Christianity, where that generosity of heart and mind can result in our holding back, backing off. Even within Christianity, that is so. Back in the day, over in Scotland, whenever there was a joint service for the week of prayer for Christian unity, our friends at the Roman Catholic Church, Our Lady of the Waves, would never cancel their service to join with the rest of us. The Methodists, the Baptists, the Episcopalians, the Presbyterians would all cancel their morning service so that we could be together, all be together, to meet in whichever church the special service would be located in that particular year, all in the spirit of Christian unity. But not the Catholic congregation. And we would shrug and smile at their firmness of purpose. Canon law, eh? What's that like? But no fuss made. There's a book by a former moderator who's written a sort of novel called Luke, Paul and the Mosque, which describes how the women of a local Church of Scotland congregation began to form connections with the women of the neighbouring mosque, and how that initiative began the process of education, bridge building and making useful connections. There was dialogue, there was meeting, there was the beginning of an end to caricature and ignorance. Meanwhile, the minister is so inspired by this new spirit that he goes off with an interfaith group to Israel, reads the Quran, and begins to see that, as he puts it, Jews, Muslims and Christians are all people of the book, with a common root in Abraham, and are effectively what he likes to call cousins in the faith. It's always good to move beyond ignorance and prejudice. A spirit of tolerance is always better than an attitude of intolerance. But the truth is, and we know that truth, respect them as much as we like, those other great world faiths are not going to change, not going to budge. They're not going to compromise on their core convictions, not even in the interests of harmony and a quiet life. They believe what they believe with a strength and certainty that brooks no compromise. Meanwhile, back at Christianity, there is no doubt that shifts and changes occur here. Progress happens from time to time. We realise that history and geography change perspective. The rules change. There is reform. What seemed important to one generation of Christians is less so to another. While travel broadens the mind and good disciplined thinking helps us distill and filter, and we begin to get a sense of what is merely accidental and contingent, what is optional. And we appreciate that this understanding, these words with their hint of adjustment in the light of time, these are risky words, dangerous words that take you to the brink of a slippery slope as you try to determine what is of its time and what is of the essence. How can they actually be different? We want to be gracious and generous and inclusive. That is the character of liberal Christianity that refuses to be locked down into narrowness. But there are some central convictions, tenets of faith, articles of belief that are so core as to be non-negotiable, and which therefore represent a barrier, a boundary, a unique selling point, without which we are nothing. We recognise that there are statements of faith, creedal formulations that are specific to a particular time in church history, when old theological and philosophical battles were fought with vigour. There are ideas, formulations and expressions of the faith that are time-specific, limited by historical context. But if we want to keep ourselves Christian, there are some identifying characteristics that are not for sale in the interest of harmony. We may not fully understand them, but we do understand that they are part of who we are in our Christian identity. They make us different from other world faiths. They are why we are Christians. St. Paul cites some of them in the passage from Colossians, and they're all about Christ. He is the one in whom we have redemption and forgiveness of sins. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. In him all things were created. He is before all things and holds all things together. He is head of the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead. In him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. All things are reconciled through him. So, no holding back there, St. Paul. Christ is not one of many, just another prophet, just a good man, the optional choice to be picked from a range of equally valid religious inspirations. No. No. The one and only. The one and only. Sorry if that's unfashionably direct, but this is who he is according to the Bible. Uncomfortably assertive it may be, not generously accommodating, but crystal clear. When we meet men and women of faith, other faiths, we applaud their insight, vision and humility. When we encounter people of the book and we hear insights from the various religious texts on which these other faiths are built, we note themes that are common and salute those truths, good and well. But I remember visiting the home of that great reformer, Martin Luther, in Eisenach in Germany, being shown round his house. They had lots of little trinkets to purchase, pens and books and things. However, for me, the present I had to buy for a dear old friend was a pair of socks inscribed with Luther's famous declaration. Here I stand, I can do no other. Here I stand, I can do no other. There comes a point when the liberal door slams shut. This is who we are. This is what we believe. Here we stand, we can do no other. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross.